This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today On Deadline is pulling out our crystal ball as we give you an outlook for the energy industry in 2025 and beyond, and dive into what consumers should expect when it comes to their monthly expenses. Drill, baby, drill. Those were the words used by President-elect Donald Trump when asked what he would do to help lower gas and energy prices in the months leading up to the November election. Now that Trump has officially won his return to the White House, the energy industry is getting ready for a new approach, especially with the nomination of Chris Wright, the CEO of Liberty Energy, to lead the Department of Energy. Wright is expected to fall in step with Trump's plan to maximize production of oil and gas domestically. He could also work to find new ways to generate electricity, which is rising in demand. We should note that Wright has been criticized for his public denial of climate change, saying in a LinkedIn post last year that there is, quote, no climate crisis. While Trump and his allies are calling for more domestic oil and energy production going forward, it's important to take stock of where we're at right now. Despite his promise to cut back on the amount of oil the U.S. produces domestically, President Joe Biden actually oversaw a boom in domestic crude oil production. The country is producing more now than it ever has, according to the Energy Information Administration. In fact, last year the U.S. produced more crude oil than any other country ever has. Much of that production was necessary due to the U.S. cutting off Russian oil at the start of the Ukraine war, which in turn helped fuel a surge in gas prices. So, when Trump makes promises to halve energy costs by opening drilling, what exactly does he mean? Gernot Wagner, a climate economist at Columbia Business School, joined Odyssey last week to share more on the topic.
Let's do talk about prices at the pump. The last time we saw prices at what I considered to be a reasonable rate was during the pandemic, but nobody was driving. So is the answer to bring prices down to reduce the consumption, perhaps by more renewables?
Well, that would work. Yes, exactly. And I think the bigger problem, frankly, is that producers, right, oil companies, wouldn't want what Trump says he wants. You can't open up offshore drilling and hope to get prices down if that oil is actually more expensive to get than any of the oil currently available.
So what would make the offshore drilling oil more expensive? I thought the most expensive was that dirty, sandy crude that we were getting out of Canada.
So that's even worse, yes. But, you know, the point is that oil companies are producing, are extracting, drilling for the cheapest possible oil right now. Mm. So in many ways, by definition, whatever gets added is going to be more expensive.
All right. About a decade ago or so, I heard constantly talk about peak oil. Is that a thing, and are we there?
And then there's that, yes, right? So, okay, so you ask Detroit, car companies are asking Trump to basically keep the, you know, the rules, the policies, what he would call the EV mandate, which of course isn't, but basically General Motors is saying, actually, we want to get off oil, not today, not tomorrow, not immediately. But yes, there better be policy certainty for us to know when to start producing many, many more electric vehicles. And yeah, more EVs on the road, less demand, oil prices would go down.
And partly because there's a limit to how much oil we can pull, right?
Yes, there is. I mean, you know, turns out there is lots more oil in the ground. We are running out of atmosphere long before we run out of oil, coal, and gas.
Okay.
So there's certainly that, right? We're not solving the climate problem simply by running out of oil. Yes, you can't just say you're going to decrease oil prices without, frankly, having a plan that involves both supply and demand.
Right. That makes total sense. I wonder why he has made such an enormous promise when it would be so difficult to accomplish. And I wonder if part of it has to do, we heard about this big meeting that he had with major oil executives prior to the election, where he asked them combined to donate $1 billion to his campaign so that policies may favor them. Could that be part of his motivation?
Sure, but oil companies don't want to have oil at the cost of half the cost of what it is today. Oil companies want high prices. Exxon is asking Trump to stay in the Paris Agreement to keep the climate targets in place, precisely for the same reasons that General Motors wants electric vehicles.
So, what else can we expect from Trump's new administration when it comes to energy policy and how it affects our wallets? Many are wondering if climate change policies will be cast aside to try and make it cheaper to fill up your car and heat your home. Professor James Coleman from the University of Minnesota joined Odyssey to share more on what to expect when it comes to energy prices and the incoming administration.
Have you noticed a difference when you filled up? So it was a year ago, the national average for a gallon of regular gas was $3.32 a gallon. Now we're at $3.07. According to AAA, here in Minnesota, the average price for a gallon of gas is $2.89. What is contributing to all of this, and how will things move or change with the incoming presidential administration?
Well, it's been sort of smooth sailing on oil prices, and that just means that we haven't had any major disruptions to oil production, and also the market isn't anticipating any right now. So there's some continuing uncertainty about the Middle East, about Russia and Ukraine, but that we've been living with that for years now, and we haven't seen that tick up, and we've had continued strong production from the U.S., and so that means that we have basically the amount of oil that we need, so people aren't that worried about that right now, and as a result, we've seen lower prices at the pump, which is always great, especially this time of year.
Oh, yeah, that it does add up when you've got savings like that. Do you see this trend continuing?
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that actually prices have been falling a little bit is that people don't see any particular risks on the horizon on the U.S. side. Of course, the U.S. is the world's biggest oil producer, and with the change of administration, people are expecting a friendly administration for the next 4 years, the oil and gas industry, which might mean more production, which could mean prices continue on the lower side. I think there's also been recently some optimism about maybe reaching deals in the Middle East, whether it's with Iran or in with Russia and Ukraine. With that said, of course, things could change at any time if either of those situations escalated.
It certainly. And then, you're talking about this incoming new president, President-elect Trump. You talk about that being favorable to gas interests. You think about drill, baby, drill. That's something he said over and over again on the campaign trail. Will that impact things as well?
Yeah, well, to the extent that he's able to implement that agenda, I mean, that would mean lower oil prices. The U.S., as I said, biggest producer in the world. It's typically there's really two places we look for sort of changes in oil production. One is the U.S. because it's the biggest producer, and the other is Saudi Arabia because it's the second biggest producer, and it also has some influence with some of the other big oil producers that are in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC.
A lot of people looking over who he is naming to his cabinet, to people he wants. One of them is Chris Wright, who is a campaign donor of his, fossil fuel executive. He wants him to be energy secretary in the upcoming administration. What kind of an impact will he have on policy, you think?
Yeah, it's interesting because, the Department of Energy, I think when Rick Perry was nominated, he famously said he was a little surprised to find a lot of it had to do with, nuclear weapons. But the Department of Energy has a lot of different roles. It has actually been getting a bigger and bigger space in the energy area because, it controls our research labs, our national research laboratories on energy, as well as energy efficiency standards that, apply to, everything you buy. From your light bulbs to your dishwasher, et cetera. And so he could take steps there to ease up some of those standards, which in theory might lead to a little bit more energy use. But I think, probably the bigger impact of the Trump administration will be in trying to, make it easier to produce oil and gas in places where the federal government has control, like offshore and federal lands. And that will involve not only Chris Wright, who's the nominee for energy, but also Governor Burgum from North Dakota, who would be the nominee for Interior, which would control a lot of that sort of domestic oil production on federal lands.
Can renewable energy truly replace our dependency on fossil fuels? Or would it be like swapping Dr. Pepper for a Dr. Thunder? Similar, but not quite the same. Ben Folk is the former CEO and president of Xcel Energy. He joined Odyssey to share more about the potential renewable energy brings to solving what some consider an energy crisis.
Well, we have talked in the past about sort of energy policy in the country, and we should put on the table, if I understand it, I don't want to speak for you, but I am not opposed. In fact, I've been a proponent of renewable energy, wind, solar, and other forms. I think you are too. So we're not talking about things that would push to the side necessarily renewables. They have their place. But can we just start with sort of your updated view or assessment of the role of renewables as part of an overall portfolio of energy in the country?
Yeah, well, let me put that in the context of what's happening in the energy landscape.
Great.
For decades, Tim, low growth was quite frankly pretty flat, and that's changed dramatically in the last year. If you talk to utility executives now, we are looking at substantial growth. It's growth driven by data centers, artificial intelligence, the reshoring of manufacturing, some crypto mining in there, a whole host of things, artificial intelligence being the largest driver. And what that means is we for a long time, we didn't need to build much new infrastructure to accommodate growth. We do now. So we need to build transmission, we need to invest in distribution, and we need to build generation. And if you look at our nation's queues, what's in the queue to get built, over 95% of it, Tim, is renewable energy. At the same time, we've got rules that have come out from the EPA that, and we can talk about them, that potentially will prematurely shut down some of our fossil fleet. So I'm all about renewables at Xcel Energy. They were a great cost benefit for our customers. That's not necessarily true across the United States, but I'm worried that there's this notion that we can shut down our fossil fleet and replace it with renewable power. And you just cannot run a big grid, the grid we're all connected to, on renewables and batteries alone. That's not the science of the grid.
So let's talk about that, Ben, because I think, you know, it's probably somewhat evident to some of our listeners, but others may not understand why renewables, especially wind and solar, can't be the only part of the solution for this heightened demand that you've described.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all know the sun doesn't shine at night, and, you know, the wind blows when it blows, and you can capture some of that with batteries, but you still need to be prepared for long durations of when the sun isn't shining and the wind's not blowing. And that's dispatchable energy that you need, energy that you can call upon, not take it when it's available. And it gets a little more complicated than that. You actually need certain qualities that spinning mass produces on the grid, Tim, that makes it reliable and allows it to be flexible, and renewables don't provide that. So we can put a lot of renewables on the grid, and we are. I mean, right now, I think in Minnesota, 40% of our energy comes from renewables, and the nation's about 20%. And again, we can put some more on it, but if we don't have dispatchable generation, primarily natural gas, and we can talk about nuclear as well, we're going to have some real issues with reliability at a time when we're growing and we have more need for resiliency and, because of extreme weather events, more need for resiliency for things like cybersecurity and that sort of thing. So it's a real issue in the United States, in my opinion.
Throughout Biden's time in office, gas prices soared to as high as $5 a gallon on average, but then declined to around $3 per gallon for much of the last couple of years. Today, the average U.S. electric bill is around $145 a month. That's up from $115 a month in 2020. To kick off his second stint in the White House, President-elect Trump is planning to make swift moves within days, according to Reuters. And those moves, well, they include rolling back climate legislation with the goal of lowering costs for consumers. Still, the momentum to address climate change exists outside of Washington, too. As NPR noted, companies are under pressure from their customers and investors to deal with climate change. Dan Lashov, U.S. director of the World Resources Institute, said this in a statement. You can count on a chorus of world leaders confirming that they won't turn their backs on climate change and nature goals. So, no matter what Trump tries to do to roll back incentives and regulation in the name of lower costs, many predict he'll face stiff opposition. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strauser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.